The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Rendell.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
After Trump declared a national emergency last week to build a border wall, he got some rare pushback from members of his own party. But they weren't concerned that Trump had made up a fake emergency. They were concerned that a Democratic president could come along and use the law to declare a real emergency over climate change.
If you declare a national emergency to circumvent Congress to pay for the border wall, what's to stop a liberal Democrat one day from declaring climate change as a national emergency?
Maybe we're going to get a Democratic president and we're going to declare a national emergency on climate change.
If the president declares this a national emergency, it's not going to be long before there's a Democratic president who does the same thing in regards to what climate change.
That's what you're worried about? That's like saying, I would give this homeless guy a dollar, but you know he's just going to use it to print out his resume and find a job. There's a big difference between the border and climate change. Climate change is an actual emergency, and we can't build a wall to stop it unless we build one around the entire planet.
We're going to build a space wall, folks, and Mars is going to pay for it.
In fact, climate change is such a serious emergency that last year, after a summer of heat waves and wildfires, scientists issued a dire warning. We have just 12 years to limit devastating global warming. A reasonable person might say, what can we do to stop this? Instead, we have a president who thinks you can stop wildfires not by slowing down climate change, but by raking leaves in the forest. That's what he told Fox News last year, even after he was asked point blank about the role of climate change.
I was watching the firemen the other day, and they were raking areas. They were raking areas where the fire was right over there, and they're raking trees, like this that are not trees, little bushes, really? That you could see are totally dry. Weeds. And they're raking them. They're on fire. That should have been all raked out.
What about the argument?
You wouldn't have the fires.
What about the argument it's climate change, that it's drier, it's hotter, and that that's contributing to it?
Maybe it contributes a little bit. The big problem we have is management. When I was in a certain state, I won't say which, the governor said, you know, we've tested it. We clean out areas and we actually set the fire just to see. We lose almost nothing.
Why won't you say which state it was? Seems to me if a governor figured out how to stop forest fires with a rake, they'd want their name out there.
You think?
Is it because they're from Navajo Happenda?
Uh-huh.
So if you're a lawmaker faced with the dire warnings of climate scientists, you have two options. You can put more money into raking little trees, or you can radically overhaul the economy in a way that would help stave off disaster. And that's the path some Democrats, led by Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, chose when they unveiled a plan called the Green New Deal, which envisions a 10-year economic mobilization that would phase out fossil fuel use and overhaul the nation's infrastructure. The plan has been endorsed by several Democratic candidates for president, but slammed by Republicans and former Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz. Last week, Schultz said the Green New Deal is not realistic. Schultz has been threatening to run as an independent unless the Democrats nominate a moderate. Yesterday, after he announced his own bid, Bernie Sanders was asked about Schultz's threat on CBS and didn't seem to take it seriously.
Howard Schultz has now said he would not run as an independent if the Democrats nominate a moderate.
Oh, isn't that nice? Why is Howard Schultz on every television station in this country? Why are you quoting Howard Schultz? Because he's a billionaire.
You're asking Bernie what he thinks about a billionaire? That just makes you look like a bad journalist. If you know one thing about Bernie, it's how he feels about billionaires. His Ben and Jerry's flavor is called Tax All the Billionaires. It's not even an ice cream pun. It's just vanilla and nickels.
All right, Seth Meyers, he went on. He does this closer look thing.
and goes on for quite a while, of course, so we don't have that much time. Actually, there was another parody song that I almost played for you today. It's from this group called The Parody Project, and a guy named, I think his name is Don Caron or something. I've played some of his other stuff before, and but the problem was it's a parody of the song Urgent by Foreigner, which is just a god-awful song to begin with. Obviously, it's lampooning the national emergency, so-called national emergency. But it goes on for like 7 minutes. I was going to play it and just suffer through the shitty song that it's based on. But I just couldn't do that to you. Anyway, busy, busy news day. So we start off with this bit from Seth Meyers about climate change being the real national emergency. And we're just going to jump right in because there's so much happening today. Speaking of climate change in this administration, there is some news on that front as well. And the Pentagon and several other federal agencies have repeatedly warned over the years that climate change is a threat to national security. Most recently, in that huge national climate assessment that was released in November, the report that said, you know, basically we've got 12 years left before, you know, all hell breaks loose, literally. Anyway, so this, the White House, of course, has never acknowledged those concerns. And now they've announced they're convening its own, the White House is convening its own panel to question climate change, to investigate it. The Washington Post, citing a National Security Council discussion paper it obtained, reports that White House staff are preparing an executive order for Donald Trump's signature that would establish a presidential committee on climate security to be chaired by a guy who is, one of the biggest, most notorious climate change deniers. His man, the man's name is William Happer, and I guess Media Matters or the Washington Post, somebody unearthed this clip from CNBC. This was recorded in 2014. Andrew Rohr Sorkin was interviewing this guy, William Happer.
I have some issues with all of this, obviously, because you don't believe in climate change at all. You made a comment.
Just a minute. I believe in climate change. Shut up.
Sir, I'm open to all ideas. You made a comment back in 2009 comparing climate change to the Holocaust. And my question is, are you suggesting when you made that comment that climatologists and climate scientists are the equivalent of Hitler and Nazis? I mean, that's what it seems like you were trying to say.
You know, I get called a denier, and anyone who objects to all of the hype gets called a denier. That's supposed to make me a Holocaust denier.
Oh, my God.
I'm getting tired of that. And the comment I made was the demonization of carbon dioxide is just like the demonization of the poor Jews under Hitler. Carbon dioxide is actually a benefit to the world, and so were the Jews.
Oh, my God. Again, that's William Happer, the man that Donald Trump is going to put in charge of his presidential committee on climate security. Don't you just feel so much better now? News out of... Yes, I know. Peter Tork of the Monkees died, my favorite monkey, and I'm very sad to hear the news. So that happened today. In Chicago, this weird story with this actor, Jussie Smollett, it just gets weirder by the minute. Chicago's police superintendent, a guy named Eddie Johnson, this morning held a press conference to announce the arrest of this actor, Jussie Smollett, under suspicion that he filed a false police report by faking a politically charged hate crime against himself.
Empire actor Jussie Smollett took advantage of the pain and anger of racism to promote his career. I'm left hanging my head and asking why. Why would anyone, especially an African-American man, use the symbolism of a noose to make false accusations? How could someone look at the hatred and suffering associated with that symbol and see an opportunity to manipulate that symbol to further his own public profile? How can an individual who's been embraced by the city of Chicago turn around and slap everyone in this city in the face by making these false claims?
All good questions. Okay, but the Chicago police superintendent opened his remarks with this.
As I look out into the crowd, I just wish that the families of gun violence in this city got this much attention.
No shit.
Because that's who really deserves the amount of attention that we're giving to this particular incident.
Oh my God, no kidding. While the cable news networks were spending a ridiculous amount of time on this Jussie Smollett story, I'm amazed that the other bigger story, sorry, isn't getting more attention. Trump tweeted about Jussie Smollett, but hasn't said a word about the uncovering of a domestic terror plot. A Coast Guard lieutenant and self-identified white nationalist was arrested after federal investigators uncovered a cache of weapons and ammunition in his Maryland home that authorities say he stockpiled to launch a widespread domestic terrorist attack targeting Democratic politicians and journalists.
This was a 49-year-old Coast Guard lieutenant. His name is Christopher Paul Hassan. He was arrested last week, and the details about what he was plotting, a full-scale attack that prosecutors say was against media personalities, politicians, and civilians, all of the details now coming out in a detention memo that's been filed with the court in Maryland. Prosecutors say that this man, Christopher Paul Hassan, was stockpiling weapons. They say they found at least 15 guns and 1,000 rounds of ammunition inside the basement apartment of his Silver Spring home. Silver Spring, Maryland, just a few miles outside of Washington, D.C. And prosecutors put it very starkly, very stunningly. They put this at the top of their memo, saying the defendant intends to murder innocent civilians on a scale rarely seen in this country. And that's why they're asking for the judge at a detention hearing to hold this suspect. What's quite stunning is that this suspect has been a member of the Coast Guard for many years, most recently assigned to the Coast Guard headquarters in Washington, D.C. The Coast Guard has put out a statement about this, saying that they, in fact, worked with the FBI and the Department of Justice. So it looks like the Coast Guard may have actually seen some red flags, raised them, and been part of this investigation.
What an incredible story. And I'm amazed that, for instance, MSNBC spent an hour nonstop on the Jussie Smollett story and virtually nothing on this. Reports say that this guy, Hassan, had been studying the manifesto of a right-wing terrorist who killed 77 people in Norway in 2011 and had developed a spreadsheet of targets that included top Democratic congressional leaders and media personalities. The list includes Joey, what prosecutors say is a reference to Joe Scarborough, former congressman now of MSNBC's Morning Joe, Cortez, an alleged reference to freshman Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and, quote, Senator Blumenjew, presumably about Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut. Amazing. In other news, because it's a busy day, a number of news organizations began reporting yesterday afternoon that special counsel Robert Mueller could wrap up his investigation and issue a report as early as next week.
Washington Post also reports the Justice Department is, quote, preparing for Mueller's report in the coming days. According to the Post, and we quote, an advisor to President Trump said there is palpable concern among the president's inner circle that the report might contain information about Trump and his team that is politically damaging but not criminal conduct. Today, Trump was asked if he thought Mueller's report should be released.
That'll be totally up to the new attorney general. He's a tremendous man, a tremendous person who really respects this country and respects the Justice Department. So that'll be totally up to him.
Probably worth noting, because we've witnessed such a newspaper war of late, the New York Times has not matched all this reporting on Mueller wrapping up. The Attorney General Barr has refused to commit to publicly releasing the report in its entirety.
As they say, stay tuned. Meanwhile, Roger Stone is back in D.C. federal court today. All this was just unraveling as I took the air. But here's the background. On Monday, Stone posted a photo of the judge presiding over the case on Instagram with crosshairs in the background next to her head, prompting the judge to schedule the hearing to discuss, quote, why the media contact order entered in this case and or his conditions of release should not be modified or revoked in light of the posts on his Instagram account. Okay. Well, BuzzFeed's Zoe Tillman is in the media room watching, and here's what she wrote about what went on in the hearing. The judge begins by entering the Insta post on the record. She asks Stone's lawyer, Bruce Rogow, if her media contact order should be modified. The lawyer says no. They believe Stone should have another opportunity to comply. He offers to put Stone on the stand. The lawyer argues that the speech issue implicated by Stone's Instagram post is separate from the Bail Reform Act, which concerns his pretrial release conditions. The lawyer says Stone's conditions could be modified if there was a, quote, real threat to a person in the community. Stone's lawyer said the judge's questions would be better addressed by Stone. So Stone then got up on the witness stand and was sworn in. Stone says he abused the judge's order and that he's sorry. Quote, I am kicking myself over my own stupidity. Stone says the post was the, quote, outgrowth of the extreme stress of the situation. He says he didn't choose the image, give me a fucking break, but takes responsibility for posting it. Another quote from Stone. This was an egregious, stupid error for which I apologize to the court. Stone says he was grateful for the initial leeway the judge gave him in her original media contact order. The judge asks if he's being paid for his commentary about his case. Stone says he is not. Oh, he's having trouble making money right now. Stone says he relies on volunteers, da-da-da-da-da. Jackson, the judge, asks if he knows how to search Google for images and if his volunteers know how to do that. Stone says yes. The judge asks, how hard is it to find a photo that didn't have crosshairs? Ooh, that gets a ding. Stone says he understood it to be the logo of an organization and an occult slash Celtic symbol. So he's lying again to this judge. Unbelievable. He just lied. Says he thought it was an occult Celtic symbol. The judge presses him to say exactly what he believed was wrong about what he did. Stone says he shouldn't have posted anything at all. And let's see if there's any update. Let's see. Stone's lawyer says this went back and forth. Stone's lawyer says Stone's action was indefensible. The judge said, I agree with you there. Then the judge asked the prosecutor what they want. The prosecutor says they want a further restriction on the extrajudicial statements of the parties. In other words, they want a stronger gag order on what Stone can say out of court. Stone's lawyer says there should be no change. And that's where it leaves off for now. So I'm going to continue on with the rest of the news. And we'll, let's see, and if this is updated, we'll update you there. So that's happening. Oh, really? Rainbow 48 in the chat room says the judge, you're telling him. never mind. It's advice. It says judge put him in jail now. He's living in a $9,000 a month rental house. Great. So I'll keep you posted on that. In the meantime, Donald Trump's former personal attorney, Michael Cohen's appearance before the House Oversight Committee is now set for a public hearing on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday. That'll happen just as Donald Trump is in Vietnam for his second summit with North Korea's Kim Jong-un. So that's going on. Now down to North Carolina, almost the same thing, isn't it? High drama yesterday during the third day of testimony before the North Carolina State Board of Elections, which is hearing evidence this week to decide whether a suspected ballot tampering scheme tainted the outcome in the 9th district where Republican Merk Harris in the race for that congressional seat allegedly leads Democrat Dan McCready by 905 votes in unofficial returns. So all this week there have been there's been testimony about how you know there was shenanigans going on. So yesterday, Harris's son, Mark Harris's son, John Harris, who is now an assistant U.S. attorney in Raleigh, North Carolina, he took the witness stand. It was a surprise. Nobody knew. Mark Harris didn't know his son was testifying. Nobody knew except the prosecutor. So John Harris testified that he warned his father repeatedly that he believed Leslie McRae Dallas, the political operative now at the center of this election fraud investigation, was shady and appeared to have illegally collected absentee ballots in 2016 while working for a different Republican candidate in North Carolina's 9th congressional district.
The hearing took quite a turn this afternoon when Mark Harris's son took the stand. Not even Mark Harris knew that his son was going to testify, and he essentially testified against him. He said that he had warned his father about Dowless, and he advised him not to hire him, but Mark Harris did not listen to his advice, and here we are today.
I expressed my concerns based on everything that I did know up to that point. Namely, my belief that McRae had engaged in collecting ballots in 2016. Now, that belief was based on my review of the absentee voter data that I've already described. I told him that collecting ballots was a felony.
That was his son. And Mark Harris took the stand today. And after a morning of tough testimony, he came back and abruptly called for a new election. There should be a new election. The thing is, Mark Harris should not be allowed to run. He should not be the candidate. He's not. Qualified to hold that position. Although Congress is on recess this week, there has been some behind-the-scenes action. The Associated Press now reporting that House Democrats are circulating a joint resolution to block Trump's national emergency that could be introduced as soon as tomorrow. Now, yesterday, take this with a grain of salt, Republican Susan Collins of Maine, who is up for re-election in 2020, became the first Republican senator to say she would join Democrats in supporting a resolution aimed at blocking the emergency declaration. Collins also said she supports a lawsuit brought by 16 states that would do the same thing. The quote was, "If it is a clean disapproval resolution, I will support it. I do support the lawsuit that was filed by the states. That may be the quickest way to get an injunction that would halt this transfer of funds." Again, it's Susan Collins, so I'll believe it when I see it. Stay tuned. All right, so as one teacher strike ends, another begins. West Virginia teachers stopped their strike after just 2 days after they successfully stopped legislation that would have created new charter schools and allowed public money to be used for private school tuition. They're back in their classrooms in West Virginia today. When teachers in Oakland, California walked off the job. Oakland is one of the priciest places in America, thanks to the tech boom. So the teachers there are asking for a 12% increase over 3 years. The school district, pleading poverty, says it can only afford 5% raises over 3 years. So once again, we say, stay tuned. But wait, there's more. On Tuesday, the Trump administration announced it was launching a global campaign to end the criminalization of homosexuality in dozens of nations where it's still illegal to be gay. I remember when I read that news story, I said, bullshit. That was my first reaction. Well, apparently this effort, led by Richard Grenell, the U.S. ambassador to Germany and the highest profile openly gay person in the Trump administration. Well, yesterday, Trump had a little press gaggle in the Oval Office, and he was asked about this initiative.
Mr. President, with the exception of Austria.
Decriminalize homosexuality, are you doing that and why?
Say it.
Your push to decriminalize homosexuality around the world.
I don't know which report you're talking about. We have many reports. Anybody else?
He had no idea what this reporter was asking about. No clue what she was talking about. All right, back to Zoe Tillman's Twitter feed in the courthouse with Roger Stone, where she writes, "Prosecutor says that Stone's testimony at today's hearing is, quote, not credible. He argues that any contrition by Stone now is belied by his actions, that he continued to give interviews and use similar language to the Instagram post and draw attention to those statements. The judge says, how is she supposed to believe that media attention will subside when Stone gets his name in the paper every day? She notes he kept talking about the issue after he apologized. What would stop him, she asks. His lawyer asks for time to suggest a narrower order. The judge is now taking a 15-minute break to process things, and then she'll come back with a decision. Hey, stay tuned, and we'll be back with a decision from Judge Jackson. Will Roger Stone go to jail, where you know he'll be a toy? Let's put it that way. Not that I endorse any kind of jailhouse violence. But if anyone was going to be the subject of it, Roger Stone, just saying. I know that was a horrible thing for me to say. I really apologize. It was an egregiously horrible thing for me to say. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back and see if the judge has ruled. Either way, we'll come back with Howie Klein of Down With Tyranny and the Blue America Pack next.
It's Thursday, February 21, 2019.
The Environmental Protection Agency is being urged to take action on toxic chemicals.
EPA's action plan on toxic chemicals in your drinking water? Take action later. Australian court blocks coal mine on climate change grounds. January was the third hottest January on record globally. Plus,
the Trump administration is planning to cancel $929 million slated for California's high-speed rail project.
Trump administration wants California's high-speed rail funding back.
All of those takebacks and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The Trump administration has called the contamination a public relations nightmare.
Oh, toxic chemicals in our drinking water is a public relations nightmare. Imagine how those people dying from cancer feel. This is your Green News Report. I'm gonna soak up the sun. Okay, Desi Doyen, I'll try to calm down from that toxic chemicals story for a moment. What do you have to kick us off today?
Well, first up, January 2019 was the third hottest January globally since record keeping began in the 1880s. That's according to NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
You're not calming me down.
Oh, sorry. That is despite a portion of the United States experiencing that record cold polar vortex that unleashed another round of nonsense from climate science deniers. Only January 2016 and January 2017 were hotter than last month. Remember when the Trump administration was caught last fall trying to bury its own study on two toxic chemicals found in most U.S. drinking water supplies because it would be, quote, a PR nightmare?
Yes, I do.
Well, late last week, Trump EPA acting administrator Andrew Wheeler unveiled what he called an historic effort to limit those chemicals used in nonstick cookware and other consumer applications.
And seeping into our water supply and on paper used at fast food restaurants and on our carpets and our couches and everything else. Yes, please continue.
Yes, PFAS chemicals persist for hundreds of years and are linked to serious illnesses like kidney and testicular cancer and contaminate the drinking water of millions of Americans. But the EPA's historic action plan turns out to be no action, but a promise to do more research and eventually establish federal limits in drinking water.
Oh, well, take your time. What's the rush?
That's exactly what Democratic Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York said in a press conference when he criticized the EPA for moving too slowly.
They have agreed to set an MCL. That's a good thing, a maximum level. What they haven't told us is two things. How long it'll take, and will the level be stringent enough so that it really protects people.
And a former official for Koch Industries, one of the most polluting companies in America, is now at the EPA, playing a key role in setting those limits on contamination, which could have major financial repercussions for his former employer.
You are so not calming me down.
Meanwhile, the Trump administration Department of Transportation says it is canceling a $900 million grant to the California high-speed rail project and is, quote, actively exploring every legal option to claw back nearly nearly $2 billion in federal funding for the project. That's after the state's new Democratic governor, Gavin Newsom, last week announced that he is scaling back the project due to cost overruns and delays. Newsom noted that a central segment of the route is already under construction, and he called the demand, quote, political retribution by President Trump, because California sued to stop Trump's border wall. Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti on MSNBC agreed.
Should the state of California pay that money back or not?
Absolutely not. And I think the president forgets there's a second branch called Congress. It's been appropriated by the Congress, and it's being put into a project that will build high-speed rail. You can't just choose your enemies and friends and decide as an imperial president to take away their funds because you don't like where they come from.
Finally, some good news. A landmark ruling in Australia, the world's top coal exporter. A high court, for the first time, has rejected a crucial permit for a new open-pit coal mine in New South Wales on the grounds that the mine will contribute to dangerous global warming. And renewable energy has muscled its way into the global energy system faster than any fuel in human history and is likely to be the world's main source of power within 20 years. That's according to the lefty tree huggers at British Petroleum.
What?
In its annual energy outlook, BP predicts that demand for its own oil will continue to rise, but it projects that global oil demand will peak in the 2030s, several years earlier than it predicted last year, and that renewables will displace coal as the world's top source of power within a decade.
Wow. Well, that is good news, but it didn't help. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to, stop by our website, please, at greennews.bradblog.com. You can make me feel better by stopping by bradblog.com/donate to help Desi and me celebrate 10 years of the Green News Report over your public airwaves, as we are doing this week. Thanks to those of you who have already stopped by bradblog.com/donate. Find, follow, and share us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I have to admit, it's getting better. A little better.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary
sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Every Thursday, we get together with our pal Howie Klein of Down With Tyranny and the Blue America Pack to talk about politics and other things. This week, we also say happy birthday. Hope you had a great one, Howie.
I did. Every birthday is a great one because, as you saw, I'm 71. I was 71 yesterday. And that starts to, make you feel like, wow, another one, and I'm still standing.
Yeah.
And I never thought that was something I would look forward to, but I do.
Yeah. Well, as we get older, you and I both have, on the last few years, both fought cancer. So I guess life is a little more precious because we have, met our own mortality in a sense.
And I'm speaking for me, but I bet it's probably the same for you. We see some of our contemporaries passing away.
Yes. Oh, it kills me. I mean, this year we lost Joel Silverman, who I adored. And I remember how great he was when I was diagnosed with lung cancer and how supportive. And then the day that he told me that they found pancreatic cancer, and just my stomach dropped. And yeah, we see our friends dropping. So life is very precious, very tenuous. So the older we get, the more precious those birthdays become. So I'm glad you had a good one and happy
birthday. I celebrated it. I had lots of nice contacts with friends, old friends, new friends. It was really nice.
Awesome. That's how they should be. Every day should be like that. So, Howie, you've got a couple of pieces this week up at downwithtyranny.com about primary challenges. You and I have talked a lot over the last few years about how important primaries are. I actually used to love primary season because that's when you get to hear all the great ideas. That's when all the potential candidates step up and you get to choose. That's when you get to fall in love and reach for the skies. But I've noticed, you know, as our politics seems to get more and more contentious, of course, the news of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez beating Joe Crowley in the primary and her push, as well as yours and some others, to primary bad Democrats. There's that old line, like, how dare you go up against someone with a D next to their name? And actually, I on the description of today's show, I sort of subtitled it today, to primary or not to primary, or all Democrats are not created equal. Because that's basically good. Where we are. Right.
Now, among your followers, the people in the chat room, the people who correspond with you, do you feel that all of them understand that, or some of them, or I mean, where does that fall with you?
Most of my listeners, the regulars in the YouTube and the NicoleSandler.com chat rooms, they're with us. They believe I'm speaking in generalities, of course, and obviously not speaking for everyone, but I would say the majority of them believe in primarying people like Joe Crowley, primarying these conservadems, the people who falsely claim to be progressive and then vote with the Republicans. They believe that it's the goal of Blue America to find great progressive candidates. I think the majority of my listeners, my regular listeners, believe that as well. We need to find the best progressives we can find to run for office and get rid of those blue dogs and new Dems because they're just holding us back.
You know, good. I'm glad because sometimes I get feedback on, especially on Twitter, from people who don't understand, who just say, you know, how dare you? You're destroying the Democratic Party and things like that. And I'd rather not repeat the same stuff over and over and over again to every person who comes along on Twitter for the first time and just discovered politics. But one of the things that you just said about it's the job of Blue America to find good candidates. You're right. That's our number one job. But there's something else that I've been doing lately, and it's a new thing for me, and I'm enjoying it. And it's very different, which is talking and having a dialogue that's not just one conversation that takes the course over months and months with not with some hardcore blue dog who's, really a Republican like Tom O'Halloran. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, a solid Democrat who leans conservative, who's in a more conservative district, but engaging with them on policies and talking it through with them about what that's going to mean to the people in their district and what these policies really, really mean. And I'm enjoying that so much, and I have actually found that I'm having an effect on some of these members of Congress.
Really?
So I feel pretty good about that. Now, there's one guy who has really come a long way, and I'm hoping eventually before the end of the season that we'll get him to come on the show and talk to you about the experience. But this is a guy who is generally considered to be, far, far to the right in the inside the Democratic Party. Hey, he just was signed on as one of the original co-sponsors of the Green New Deal.
Really?
I find that these people can be brought along. I mean, after all, they decided to be Democrats. They're not Republicans. And if someone is willing to talk to them, and sincerely talk to them and talk and debate with them about ideas in a good way, it really can help. I mean, I've seen, I'm not the only one doing that. I've seen other people do it as well and do it successfully, including other members of Congress. So I feel really good about that. But some people are never going to change, especially the people whose paychecks depend on holding on to the status quo. You're never going to get a change there. And that's why I was so excited today when you and I talked a little bit earlier about bringing on the guy who is going to be the primary opponent for Nancy Pelosi this year.
Uh-huh.
Now, he did it last year as well, but he jumped in very, very late, and there were already lots of candidates who were running. This year, he's going to start very, very early, and he did well last time. And his goal, obviously, he would like to be in Congress. He would make a great member of Congress. He's a constitutional lawyer who works for the electric, the Electronic
Freedom Foundation. Right.
Yeah.
EFF.
He's there. He's an attorney there who brings people into the organization. Anyway, he happens to be right this minute at a demonstration in Pelosi's office in San Francisco.
Ah.
And what I was saying about his goal, it's more than just running for office. He is holding her feet to the fire on the important issues. And even if he doesn't win, but he winds up forcing her to take a better attitude about the Green New Deal, which she makes fun of.
Yes.
Forcing her to take a better attitude about health care for all, Medicare for all. You know, that's really what he's pushing, and he's pushing it in a place where it's possible to do, just like it was possible. I mean, everyone said it was impossible, but yet Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez beat Pelosi's heir.
Yes.
Joe Crowley. He was the next speaker. No one could go near him. He was, you know, no one even paid any attention to that race.
That's right.
And she beat him, and she didn't beat him by a little. She beat him by a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, and a lot of people are saying, well, you know, we could replicate this all over the country. And that's what the articles that I wrote about were. But it isn't true. You can't replicate it all over the country. You need a really exceptional candidate, and you need some really strong ideas that you can run on. And not everyone can do that. You need a certain kind of talent. So is there any chance that we could get Shaheed on the phone right now?
Yep. So his name is Shaheed Buttar. Calling.
State your name after the tone, and Google Voice will try to connect you.
Okay, so we're calling him now. Howie Klein calling.
Yes, and we hope that we can get him on the phone now so he can talk for himself about what is going into getting a really, really, what's going to be a really, really high-profile primary together against the Speaker of the House,
wow,
who many people adore and many people love. And it's not going to be something easy, but we feel very, very strongly that we have a candidate who, if anyone is going to be able to do it, Shaheed is the guy who's going to be able to do it.
Yeah, he's not answering, though. I guess maybe he's not hearing his phone in the office where they're...
Which is a shame because, you know, maybe he's in a paddy wagon being dragged away.
That's possible.
From Pelosi's office. Yeah. I hope not.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, anyway, you and I can still talk about these primaries as we were planning anyway.
I want you to respond to this because somebody in the YouTube chat room, Nephilim 2K18, says, but we work on primarying Dems too much. We end up with Republicans winning at the end, like in 2011.
Well, that isn't true. I mean, working on primaries is to find the best candidate who can then wind up being the Republican. Now, we're right now talking about congressional races, not necessarily presidential races.
Mm-hmm.
If that's, you know, so not every one of these candidates is running against Trump. And remember, in a lot of races, the Democrats did really well. They flipped 43 seats. It's going to be 44 probably once this whole mess North Carolina is fixed. And in a lot of those cases, not all of them, but in a lot of those cases, there were very strong primaries. And those primaries help people in several ways. One is getting the best candidate, which not necessarily do they always do, but sometimes they do. But the other thing is getting people excited about the race. Now, that happens a lot. So, you know, people shouldn't be nervous about primaries, especially, you know, when you go to a really blue district, there is no alternative except a primary. I mean, in Alexandria Ocasio's district or in Pelosi's district now, there's no Republican that's going to win there. It's mm-hmm. impossible. There aren't Republicans in
right.
those districts.
Right.
In some of these districts, Trump got 5%. You think there's a problem with having a primary? If you don't have a primary, there's no other way to hold accountable
exactly.
the incumbent. They're just there forever.
Exactly.
I said in the beginning with Shahir, even if he doesn't win, if he can push Nancy to adopt and to even pay attention to some of the most important and most beloved policies of the day, like the Green New Deal, which she doesn't understand, or Medicare for All, he's accomplished a lot. So people who are nervous about primaries should think it through a little bit more before they start accusing people of electing Trump.
Absolutely. And my thought is, if a candidate is not representing their district, then they deserve to be primaried. It's all about accountability. It's all about them, doing the will of the people. And when we finally, and Joe Crowley's not the only one. We might remember a few years ago, Eric Cantor, who had the same, with the Republican counterpart to Joe Crowley, I believe, in yep. the House. And he was primaried by a guy named Dave Brat, who came out of nowhere and won, just the same as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez beat Joe Crowley.
And guess what? He's not in Congress anymore.
No, he was just beat
because Democrat went and beat him.
That's right. So it happens. But, there are too many, I think, people with the D next to their names in Congress. We talk about them all the time on the show, who are either, working against the Democratic platform. They're voting with the Republicans the majority of the time. What I don't get, and we've discussed this and I still don't understand it, is how someone like Kyrsten Sinema, who you outed a long time ago as being the worst member of the House for the Democrats, Chuck Schumer pushed her to be the next senator from Arizona, where she's free to be the worst Democratic senator in the U.S. Senate.
And which she already is. She already has the worst voting record for the year
Amazing.
Of any Democrat in the Senate. Worse than Joe Manchin.
Wow. Wow.
Yep.
Well, yeah.
I mean, a friend of mine in the Senate, a Democrat in the Senate, told me the other day that she's going to make Joe Manchin look better than he's ever looked in his life.
Why am I not surprised? And now Chuck Schumer is starting to talk about, obviously, 2020 candidates. And it seems that he's shooting a little higher this time out.
No.
No?
No. I mean, in some cases, our hopes and his hopes are going to be similar. But in other cases, not. I mean, Colorado has an opportunity to elect a really good, strong, progressive Democrat. And he's pushing for, the guy I call Fracken Looper, who calls himself Hickenlooper.
Yep.
So the last time that he made a public appearance as governor in front of Democrats in his own state, he was booed and booed and booed. Democrats don't like him anymore. He has shown what he is, and they don't want him. But he's perfect for a corporate guy like Schumer. And Schumer's going to do all he can to force him to be the candidate. Now, he's also looking towards Beto O'Rourke, which I think is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is Beto as progressive as we wish he would be?
No.
On some things, yes.
But
and on other
he's
things,
in
no.
Texas. He's also in
but
Texas.
He's a viable candidate. He's not perfect, and no one is, but
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be looking to support him in a Democratic primary for president, but he's probably the exact right person to go up against John Cornyn. And people say, well, if he couldn't beat the hated Ted Cruz, how's he going to beat Cornyn, who's so loved? Well, the fact of the matter is that's people just talking out of their asses. They don't realize that isn't true what they're saying. They think it is true, but they're wrong. Cornyn has very, very weak support in Texas. Cruz may be hated inside the Beltway.
Mm-hmm.
He may be hated by Democrats. He's hated by progressive activists. Yes. But in Texas, among Republicans, he's not hated. And Beto came very, very close to beating him.
Mm-hmm.
He's much Cruise is more popular than Cornyn is.
Wow.
And Cornyn's popularity is 1 inch deep anyway.
I think it's a
good race for Beto. I don't know if he's going to take it. Schumer is trying to persuade him to do it. Schumer didn't help Beto last time. I don't think Beto even wanted his help last time. But he's promising him the world now if he'll run. So that would be an interesting one.
That would be.
The race where I feel Schumer is doing a really good job is in Georgia, where he's trying to talk
Stacey Abrams into
running. Stacey is a solid candidate who, she's... Again, no one is perfect. I don't want people calling and screaming that we're selling out to corporatists or something like that. But she's really good. She's not perfect, but she's good. And she would not only would she be better than the Republican David Perdue, who's in there now and is running for re-election. Obviously, she'd be better than that. But she'd also be better than most Democrats. I mean,
absolutely.
If Bernie was running for senator, he'd be better than her.
Yep.
He's not running for senator of Georgia. And I can't think of anybody who has any chance at all of winning that seat who would be better than Stacey. Stacey would be great. I've known Stacey for many, many years.
Really?
She was part of young elected officials from People for the American Way. I met her 10 years ago. And I thought to myself, this young woman is going to go someplace. And in fact, it was more like 20 years ago.
Wow.
This young woman is going to go someplace. She's going to be an important person. When the first time I heard her speak, and I was standing right next to her, and she's talking, and I was like, wow, she is something. And she has turned out to be.
Perfect? She really has. No. And nobody's perfect. Look, there are things that I disagree with Bernie Sanders on. There are things that I disagree with Elizabeth Warren on. Nobody's going to be perfect. But you go for the ones who most closely align with your beliefs. By the way, you mentioned John Cornyn. They must be scared because Donald Trump's latest tweet reads like this. Senator John Cornyn has done an outstanding job for the people of Texas. He's strong on crime, the border, the Second Amendment, and loves our military and vets. John has my complete and total endorsement. Make America great again. So
every Trump endorsement is those exact words, except he takes the name out. He doesn't change a single word except the name of the person and the name of the state. That is his standard endorsement.
Wow.
It's canned. He doesn't write it. It's just sitting there and he just puts it in, plugs in the name, plugs in the state, finished.
Wow. But the fact that he's tweeting this out today out of the blue, obviously I think they're running scared of Beto, thank you.
They definitely are running scared of Beto. Polling from University of Texas is showing that it's a couple of point race. That either one it's within the margin of error. Either one of those guys can win, and it would be pretty amazing if Beto did that. If he ran for the U.S. Senate and wound up in the U.S. Senate beating John Cornyn, it would be like amazing, and Beto would be a big hero.
Yeah. Right. So I started mentioning at the beginning that you have two pieces up at Down with Tyranny from this week about 2020 primary challenges. And you quote an article from the New York Times from last week by a guy named Shane Goldmacher. You call it a lazy piece where, again, the title is The Ocasio-Cortez Effect, Wave of Challenges Hits Entrenched New York Democrats. And he gets it all sort of back-ass words, doesn't he?
I thought so, yes. I mean, first of all, the person who deserves a primary probably more than anybody is a new Dem in southeast Queens, and it sort of his district spills into a part of Long Island where I used to live when I was growing up. So I know the district very, very well. And I don't want to say he's the most corrupt member of the New York delegation, although organizations have said that he is, and people who have investigated him have said he is the most corrupt. But if he isn't the most corrupt, he's one of a really small handful of extremely corrupt members of Congress from New York. And Goldmacher doesn't even mention his name.
Oh my God!
And yet he's going to have a very strong primary. I talked to this young African American attorney who's working on challenging him now.
Who is that? And who is it that?
I mentioned his name in the piece. It's like he's got like a, you know, like an Arabic first name,
okay,
and then like an all-American second name, like Morrison or something like that.
Okay.
I just can't remember his name. But if you've got the piece in front of you, if you do?
Yeah, I'm looking for it.
It's towards the end of the story.
Okay.
But I have a picture of the kid up in it, too, and probably his name is right near there. And you're right, we should definitely mention it. But he hasn't declared yet. So, and he's not 100% sure.
Adam Bunkedo? Is that
no.
Okay.
No, that's not him.
Okay.
That's another interesting candidate. But he's running, and we want to get into that. He's running against a very progressive person. So I wanted to talk about the difference in running. Adam Bunkedeko, whose family were refugees from Uganda, that was a different kind of a situation because he. He would be great, but he's going up against someone who is really, really good. Like, she's great. Yvette Clark.
Okay.
I know her. She's wonderful. She's got, I think if the last time I looked, she had like the 11th best voting record of anyone in Congress. So, you know, it's sort of like, you know, if he wants to go up against her because he's better than her, fine. But I don't know that it's a movement situation where the whole movement should get behind him and penalize someone who's done, there's no one who could point to something that's wong with her voting record. She's wonderful. And, you know, he makes the case that she hasn't done enough for the district and she hasn't worked for the district. Okay, fair enough. And if he can make the case to the voters in her district that he's better, and he would be a better congressperson, then God bless. Mm-hmm. Let him do it. But I just don't have the feeling that it's something that the progressive movement should put their energy into. It's just, you know, maybe it's just me thinking that way. And you know, I'll be honest, Ayanna Pressley.
Yes.
She was in a similar situation. Now, she ran against someone who is a good progressive, not as good as Yvette is, but a good progressive. And I kind of had the same feeling. I was thinking, you know, she seems really, really good, but this other guy is really good. Are we going to, like, you know, go up against him because he, just because of some of the local stuff that he doesn't like, that she doesn't like, I should say? So I kind of had... you know, funny feelings about that. Now, the fact of the matter is that she did get elected, and she turns out to be incredibly good. And no one could have doubted that she was going to be incredibly good. She is. She's one of the best that there is. By the way, the guy who was running against Meeks, I just remembered his name.
Yeah.
It's Kair Morrison.
Okay.
So his last name is Morrison, but his first name is Kair, which is K-H-A-A-I-R.
Okay.
Ka, and then Air, Kair.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Oh, there he is. Now I find it.
Sorry?
Now I find it. All right. So
yeah. I just had one conversation with a guy. We were on the phone for about an hour. Then I read everything I could find about him. And we will continue talking. So I get a more and more of an idea of who he is and what kind of a congressman he's going to wind up being. Now, I remember... one of the first primaries that Blue America got involved with was against a very, very corrupt Democrat in a super blue district, just like Meeks district.
Mm-hmm.
No Republican is going to win in Meeks district. No Republican is going to be able to even get close in this district that I'm talking about. It was a district in Maryland. The guy's name was Al Wynn. He was voting with the Republicans for no reason at all, except that he believed in what they believed in this corporate stuff and war and all the wrong stuff. And I met this woman, Donna Edwards. Mutual friends introduced me to her. I thought she was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I got to know her over the course of time. And when she decided she was going to run for Congress, Blue America backed her. And the very first time she ran, as happens with many people, they don't win.
Yeah. But eventually,
she came close, she didn't win. And the night that they announced that she didn't win, I was on the phone with her, and telling her what a great job she had done and telling her she needs to immediately get right back into it and without a break and start running against him immediately.
Right.
Which she did, and she became the congresswoman.
Yep. Well, so
and a great one.
Yes, she was. Sad she's not still there. Howie Klein, we're just out of time. I'm going to put links to these two articles we discussed on the blog at NicoleSandler.com and I encourage everyone to read them and check in with DownWithTyranny.com every day. And if you want to send Howie a birthday present, go make a Blue America donation or donate $20 to Bernie Sanders.
I always say $20 and 20 cents.
That
just
works.
For good luck.
2020. Thank you so much, Howie Klein.
Bye, Nicole.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye. All right, and very quickly, out of the Roger Stone trial, the judge hasn't ruled yet, but said if the conduct of the past weekend is what Mr. Stone would call judicious, it would be foolhardy for the court to take no action and learn what injudicious looks like. She said the apology rings quite hollow. Finally, the judge is prohibiting Roger Stone from making any public statements about his case, the investigation, or any participants in the investigation, quote, period. He will be allowed to solicit funds for his legal defense and say he's innocent of the charges, but that's it. If Stone violates this gag order, the judge says she will revoke his bond and detain him pending trial. Stone is getting a second chance, the judge says, but this is not baseball. There will be no third chance. And with that, we're done for the day. Tomorrow, we'll be joined by the one and only Greg Palast, who will fill us in on what the fuck is going on in Venezuela. As always, thank you for listening. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.